It's time for Rebel Extra. This is your team, Las Vegas, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 364-1100. That's 364-1100. Now, live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Bernie Fratto and John Von Tobel.
Well, the rested Rebels headed into today's game after an eight-day hiatus. But sometimes the numbers just don't lie. The Rebels hadn't won in their last six tries heading into today's tilt with San Diego State. Meanwhile, the Aztecs had beaten UNLV nine times in a row and four straight times at the Viejas Arena. And in reality, well, this game was decided completely in the first half. San Diego State built a 41-26 lead with a pressuring defense and the hot hand of Matt Shrigley. The Aztecs outscored UNLV 22-8 in the paint, 18-0 in bench points. UNLV could only muster 12 points in the last 13 minutes of the first half, and they really never got their offense going, at least consistently. And it doesn't help matters that San Diego State is 70-4 in their last 74 games when leading at halftime in their home-friendly confines. Now, in the second half, the Rebels showed some fight, thanks to some long bomb threes. What else? UNLV closed the gap to 66-60 with 4:22 left in the contest. Unfortunately, another four-minute scoring drought ensued, buoying by some unthinkable mental errors, supplemented by four empty possessions in the last 3 minutes, and that paved the way for San Diego State to close with an 11-4 run to seal the victory. Final score, San Diego State Aztecs 77, UNLV Running Rebels 64. UNLV is now 10-17 overall, 3-12 in Mountain West Conference play, and the owners of a seven-game losing streak. Welcome back, folks, to another edition of Rebel Extra, the post-game show devoted to you, the fans and supporters of UNLV Running Rebel Basketball. Rebel Extra is brought to you by our proud sponsors, Angel Park Legacy and Durango Hills, Obie Sports' most complete golf course experiences in Las Vegas. Diamondback Land Surveying, from brick walls to the Taj Mahal, Diamondback Land Surveying are your land surveying experts. 8-Ball Bail Bonds, if you had more fun at the game than the law allows, call 8-Ball Bail Bonds to get you out of jail. And Pizza My Dear with a smoking lunch deal, a 12-inch pizza for only $5 with two locations to serve you. Go to pizzamydear.com. We come to you after every game this season, folks, and the season is winding down. So we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 364-1100. Pick up the phone, be part of the action, drop some knowledge, 364-1100. Or you can text your thoughts, 69187. Please preface your text with ESPN. Before I go any further, let me introduce my broadcast team to my left, as always, turning all the dials, keeping us on the air, is, of course, producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado. He'll also be taking all of your calls at 364-1100. To my right, I'm joined by the man. He has his own show on our sister station, Fox Sports 1340 AM, across the hall every Sunday morning at 8 AM. The show is called Out of Line, and his name is Brian Feldman. Brian, you don't expect, I guess, to win at Viejas Center, but at some point, hopefully, this losing streak will end. Hope springs eternal, maybe. Just ask San Diego State. January 11th, they were in last place in the Mountain West Conference, and now they're climbing toward the top again.
San Diego State, Bernie, winning the last couple of ball games, not looking at all like the San Diego State team we expected or anybody expected at the beginning of the season, but they're starting to play better at the right time, and that is the key for teams to shore everything up right now. San Diego's defense today looked fantastic. One of the thing that makes San Diego State special, or what was supposed to, was their defense. And their length. And it's something that can pose problems for team. It's just their big problem this year, Bernie, has been inconsistency. They were inconsistent tonight as well, but not when it mattered. Down the stretch again, UNLV, as you mentioned, 11-4 run at the end to close it for San Diego State. If there's any positive, UNLV did win the second half by 2 points.
Well, the first half for UNLV was an unmitigated disaster, in my opinion, although at one time the score was tied at 14 because they hit a couple of long bomb threes. But the reality sets in, and after hitting the first two threes, the Rebels were 1 of 6 for their next six attempts. In the first half, the Rebels outscored in the paint 22-6. Bench is outscored 18-0. Mooring, Clyburn, and Green combined in the first half to go 3 for 16. San Diego State, I thought, was sloppy to start the game. Six turnovers in the first 9 minutes. They only had one in the remaining of the second for the remainder of the first half, and only two in the entire second half. So they cleaned things up. Defensive pressure set the tone for just about everything else. Malik Pope with a really nice-looking turnaround sort of a drop step skyhook, as it were, or just a post up on Cheikh Ndombele, who had a decent game. UNLV only 12 points in the last 13 minutes in the first half. And, you know, as I said, the Rebels did show some fight in the second half, but it was mostly draining long bomb threes. There were a lot of defensive lapses. I'm going to cite them. Was there anything that stuck out to you today? After you answer, the one thing that stuck out to me was a play that will be under the radar, but it took place with 13:21 to go in the first half, and for me, it was a microcosm of the entire game, and it had to do with a self-inflicted turnover on an inbound play.
I remember what you're talking about, Bernie. To me, what stood out is I really expected UNLV to play a lot more zone defense than they did. They typically do. Up until under 4 minutes to go in the first half, it was all man, and it's amazing because you see San Diego State make adjustments. As you mentioned, UNLV was forcing turnovers early in the game with that man defense, playing really tight, and then all of a sudden...
You think they were really forcing turnovers, or San Diego State, which is sloppy with the ball?
San Diego State was sloppy with the ball, Bernie, but it did seem like San Diego State also came out expecting UNLV to play more zone defense because they typically do. And I think that might have been a little bit disruptive for them as well. But they figured it out as they always do. And the better team showed up, Bernie, and that's San Diego State.
I thought San Diego State somewhat sleptwalked in the first 10 minutes of the game. And then something happened. After a steal and a drive to the hoop by Chris Clyburn, he was rejected by Azundu. And the crowd went nuts. Clyburn went down. He was clutching his knee. I'm glad he was okay. Ended up returning into the game. That made the score San Diego State 16-14. It was somewhat of a key play. The Aztecs get the ball right back. Shrigley hits another three. San Diego State goes on a 7-0 run. Then they go on a 13-4 run, keyed by defense. And the fact that every time they would think about sort of a zone matchup, D, Christian Jones would get lost down low, no help D, no one rotating over. They don't recognize things. The lack of awareness is there. I think they're actually slightly better when they play man defense.
Yeah, well, I do too, and I think that's what Marvin Menzies has seen as well. But Christian Jones, Bernie, that was the knock on him at St. John's. At times, he could absolutely show up and dominate, and other times, he's quiet and disappears. And for a guy that weighs 240 pounds with his size, you would expect more consistency out of him, and they haven't had that all season.
Well, that's true. And a couple of things. We've buried one of the leads, and that is Chris Clyburn got a start, probably deserving. Zion Morgan, Clyburn started in place of where Zion Morgan had been. Who was conspicuously missing from today's game, Brian? Didn't step foot on the floor for the entire 40 minutes. You get three guesses, and the first two don't count.
I think that's about the easiest question you've ever asked me, Bernie. Jalen Poizer.
Winner,
very,
winner.
Very, very, very surprising. I mean, how in the world does he
We're
not get
Mark
on the
Anderson
floor for a minute?
We're going to ask Mark Anderson about
that. Yeah, I'm sure Mark is going to ask Marvin Menzies that question after the game. But, again, Clyburn started today, and Menzies pointed to that even though offensively Chris Clyburn has been inept since early in the season, he says he's been playing
now,
better.
Has he been hurt? I give the benefit of the doubt because – Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say nobody said that, and it's amazing because it looked like Chris Clyburn got badly hurt in this game. He came down funky on his right leg, and it looked like he had a knee injury, and later on I saw him make one of the best plays he's made all season, a very athletic play, so I don't know how hurt he was. But I will say this, Menzies said that defensively, if you've been watching, he has stepped it up, and Menzies said the main reason was how he has been practicing. So that's why he got
to start.
Which
is part of his script for success.
True, but
I do think Clyburn, over the course of the season, has had some of those nagging little ankle-biting type injuries, as it were, that never quite heal, so you're never quite 100%. Because in the last couple of games, he looks like he's gotten his fast-twitch muscles back. Now, give the Rebels some credit here. Early on, they showed they had a couple of offensive possessions, Brian, where they actually looked pretty good. Their spacing was outstanding. They positioned two guys in the corners, Ofebu in one corner and Tyrell in the other, and they got the ball moving side to side, and Ofebu hit a three to put UNLV up 14-12, about the 13-and-a-half-minute mark. And I said to myself, this is the strategy against San Diego State and their length and their athleticism. Space them out, space them way out, get the ball moving side to side, create movement, create open looks, then you've got to knock down your open looks. And then 30 seconds later, when the Rebels get the ball back after a turnover, they go to inbound the ball, and I want to say it was Tyrell Green inbounding the ball, but Mooring was supposed to, so he comes running toward the baseline. Tyrell, I think it was Green. Maybe a caller can correct me, or you can correct me. They inbound the ball to Mooring. Now he's got it. But he carries the ball back over the out-of-bounds line and the end line, and it was a self-inflicted turnover. It was almost like a Harlem Globetrotter play where they hand the ball to the ref. I'm like, this didn't just happen, did it? Oh, that Jovan Mooring. He's just lovable, leave it to Beaver. And the dude can play. He had 26 points today, but he manages to do at least one or two of those every game, and he didn't disappoint today.
There's always bonehead plays out of Mooring, you know, and then there's great plays. And, you know, Mooring, if you remember, right before the Rebels did take the lead or catch up, Mooring made a great give-and-go play with Dembele that just it looked like a solid D1 play that you don't see out of them. And it was really good. And, of course, it led to a nice basket. So every now and again, you see flashes of him showing he can play the point guard position. He's second in the Mountain West in assists.
Right.
I mean, but then, like you said, Bernie, every game there are two or three plays where you just scratch your head and say, what in the world was he thinking?
But I think the Rebel struggles were on defense, and it started to show as the second half wore on. Malik Pope, four straight jump hooks in the paint, posting up, showing the athleticism that San Diego State fans had hoped that potential would realize. Let's go out to the phone lines to get the ball rolling, get the party started. We are joined by Steve. Steve, welcome to Rebel Extra. What are your thoughts today?
I just called to let you guys know. I watched, listen after the game, and Mendez said that, Post couldn't play because of he violated team rules, so they wouldn't let him play.
You're talking about Jalen Poizer?
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that. That was the reason.
Makes sense, because it had to be something, Bernie. I mean, there's just no way he doesn't get off the bench for an entire game.
Anything else you got, Steve?
Yeah, it's just the same old stuff. I was listening to Robert Smith and them, and even Mendez, almost like he agreed that they just don't have the talent to match up right now.
I think that's fair.
And
I agree with that.
Because they scored a ton of inside points, and they just don't have the guys to match up. And
they meaning San Diego State, correct? That's who you're referring to. San Diego State scored a ton of inside points.
Yes, sir. That's what I meant. Yeah. And this constant missing easy shots, and like you said, the lapses in defense, that stuff makes it tough. But that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks for
checking in
again, Steve. I always appreciate it. You know, here's the thing about I enjoy it when Steve calls Brian, just between you and me, don't tell anybody. He always calls him Mendez, but I'm not going to correct him. Just let it go. Just let
yeah,
it go.
Absolutely.
Just let it go.
I don't think Marvin would correct him.
I'm not going to correct him. You going to correct him, Bobby? Bobby didn't care. That's what I like about Bobby. The bottom line is, Steve was right in terms of the fact that San Diego State got a ton of points in the paint. That obviously showed. And you know San Diego State, this is a shell of the good great Steve Fisher teams that he's had in the past. And by the way, if you're wondering, because I'm asked a lot, when will the Rebels be good again? I don't know. We're going to talk about that as the shows wind down. We have, you know, four or five Rebel Extras left. San Diego State got to the big dance Fisher's third year because San Diego State won the Mountain West Conference tournament his third year. Then they had a couple of down years. But then after 5 years, they won their first Mountain West Conference championship. Steve mentioned talent. I don't know if this team was a play short or a player short when they were losing those close games. I think it many times comes down to what I would call time, score, situation awareness, and how often the Rebels commit these maddening self-inflicted wounds. And I know for a fact there are times you look at Coach Menzies, he's looking up at the heavens, talking to himself, scratching his head, saying, what can I do? Those three empty trips in the final 3 minutes, Brian, when the Rebels had actually closed the gap to within 6 points, were absolutely costly. Tyrell Green with the travel. You can complain. It was a costly turnover, 2:59 left to go. He just simply didn't get his feet set. He traveled. 32 seconds later, Ochio Fable steps down the end line. Their second forced unforced error in 32 seconds, two empty possessions. Mooring gets the ball as the game's winding down. At this point, they were still down by 8. Drives into traffic, plays hero ball, forces it, steps, loses the ball, I believe. Chris Clyburn was wide open in the corner, and frankly, they needed a 3 then because time, score, situation, it was a 3 or 4 possession game. The inability. How about the intentional foul, the grab, not really having a grasp of the rule? You may not like the rule, but that's the rule. And toward the end of the game there, when Tyrell Green grabbed Cheatham and he made both free throws to make the score, I believe that made it 77-62. Just maddening, self-inflicted wounds that fall into the category of what I would characterize as time, score, situation, awareness. That has been the thing that has plagued the Rebels in conference play more than anything else.
Great point, Bernie. You know, what I saw today, and back to Steve's call, saying the one thing that I thought, and you alluded to it for a second, was the great point is, again, this team is not as talented, and you need to keep that into perspective. How much are you seeing, Bernie? Today, I thought I saw a little bit. Like you said, the first half started off horrific. They stayed in the game because San Diego State really slept through the first 10 minutes of the game. But are you seeing anything that you can stamp as coaching improvement on this team? That's something you're seeing where you could say, man, it looks like they are being coached up a little bit. Bernie, I saw that a little bit today. A couple of times where I saw them keep the ball out in the perimeter, where Tyrell Green or Javon Mooring would throw up a shot with 14, 15 seconds to go. They had the open look, and they passed it around a few times. That's where maybe you see them thinking, maybe it's Menzies yelling on the sidelines to them. But that's going to be the big question at the end of this year, Bernie, is, again, we know this team isn't as talented as most of the teams in the Mountain West. The key is, are they improving? Are they learning from this coaching? That's going to be the big question at the end of the year with this pass that Marvin Menzies is getting.
Here's why that's a complex question to answer, because it's not being reflected in the final score, and it's not going to be reflected in the conference or overall record. But you can't tell me Checkin Dembele hasn't improved.
Exactly.
Especially offensively.
He's free got throws. An offensive what about game his free can, throws now? He's been working on it.
By the way, the Rebels were 16-19 from the charity stripe today.
Big time.
All right? Coach Menzies is evaluating. Obviously, regardless of whatever the situation was that kept Poyser on the bench today, his minutes are being reduced. Right? Troy Baxter has not found his way on the floor. Coach continues to evaluate and reevaluate. That's why Chris Clyburn found his way back into the starting lineup. Zion Morgan seeing more time. Dembele, etc. There will be several players on this roster that will return next year, and they may be different roles, but they'll be needed roles. That evaluation process continues. Now, the Rebels were showing improvement in terms of the one-loss record a while back, and then they've regressed. That's what happens, okay? That's simply what happens. That's not a reflection on Coach Menzies as much as I think it's an overall characterization of this team as a whole. You've got to look at the season as a whole, okay? They end up on 10 wins, so what if they were 10-10 at one point? It doesn't. The cadence doesn't matter. If this is what your record is, your record is who you said they are. Your record is what it says it is, according to Bill Parcells. I thought at this point, I didn't have them beating New Mexico at the Pit. I thought they would have split between Southern Illinois and Western Kentucky. I didn't think they'd win both those. On the other hand, I thought they would have beaten San Jose State on a home floor. So let's let this play out. The answer to your question is there is no answer in terms of improvement, because people are only going to ascertain improvement as to whether or not they win games and they get better as the season goes on vis-a-vis their one-loss record. Let's go back out to the phone lines, and we are joined by the fan favorite, Kevin. Kevin, what is your synopsis of today's theatrical performance?
Well, all that aside, Bernie, and putting today's game aside, you know, Wednesday night when they go up there to Colorado, I guess you can really base, in my opinion, you can base the entire season on Wednesday night's game. Because if UNLV folds their 10, I mean, this is where Marvin Menzies needs to earn his salary and his paycheck. Because, in my opinion, every year there's not one player on Air Force's team that would ever get recruited by UNLV. So if UNLV goes up there and doesn't play, I mean, today they tried, right? They competed. If they go up there and quit, that's really bad. Would you guys agree, or am I putting too much into it?
Well, it's an imponderable in the sense that they're not going to quit. I think they'll play hard. But the Air Force took the Rebels to double overtime, and it took a bank three-point shot from Javon Mooring. The Rebels' leads and many of their wins have been fraudulent. I'm sorry. Too much of the time, Kevin. There's no ball movement. There's no fluidity. There's just threes being jacked up. Why do you think they climbed back into it today? They hit their first four threes in the second half. They climbed back into it. Now, We've buried the lead, Kevin, because Wednesday night's game is for sole possession of last place in the Mountain West Conference Tournament. And if the Rebels lose that game, most likely they'll have a stronghold on the 11th place finish, which means they'll play Wednesday in the Mountain West Conference Tournament against the number 6 seed. And if the season ended today, that would be Fresno State.
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I've accepted the no motion on offense and just burping up threes. I've just accepted that. This one will be interesting, at least for me, because I mean, Wednesday and February, you know, two last place teams. This is where you earn your paycheck as a coach. That's my point.
Well, he can't dribble, shoot, and pass and play defense for them, Kevin. You're a knowledgeable basketball observer, and you have to see what we see in terms of the consistent mental breakdowns on defense. And I hate to call people out, but Christian Jones, 2 or 3 times, failing. There's an old saying, keep sight of your man, keep sight of the ball. And Christian Jones lost sight of both 2 or 3 times, and that cost them. How in the hell? Who was it, Shrigley, on that inbounds play? Do you remember that? As a guy that wide open did can of three on an inbounds play.
Terrible recognition.
Oh, I have it in my notes. I put the Aztecs up 37-22 with 3:24 left on a timeout. I mean, what? Wide open, Kevin. Nobody was around him. Did you see that play?
You know, I follow it on the radio, but the last thing, and I'll let you guys continue your show. Remember, you and I have lunch, Bernie. Jalen Poizer will announce on Twitter he is transferring from UNLV by May 1st, 2017.
All right, I look forward to it. Hey, I'll tell you what, Kevin, let's have a little fun real quickly. The Rebels play at Air Force, home against Reno, home against Utah State, then at Fresno State to close out the season. How many of those games do they win?
0-4.
All right. Talk to you after Wednesday night, Kevin, hopefully.
Thank you.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Kevin right there. 0-4, it's going to be tough. I think the best chance they have is the home game they've got coming up in a week or so against Utah State. Other than that, Bernie, I just don't know how this team gets another win.
Did you see them battle San Diego State the other night?
Yeah,
yes, it was on their home floor. Jalen Moore, they got a couple of good-looking, tough freshmen. That's not going to be an easy game. And what's scary, Brian, I don't know if the Rebels have a home floor advantage anymore. And what's scarier is if the Rebels fall to Utah State and fall to Reno a week from today. That's their next home game. It'll play one home game in 3 weeks, that San Jose State game. So they'll come back next Saturday. It's a matinee, February 25th, against Reno. It's their second to last home game. And then the final home game will be against Utah State. If they drop both of those, the Rebels will have finished their season under 500 at the Thomas and Mack.
That is a tough pill to swallow, Bernie. Wow.
And on that note, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we'll be joined by Mark Anderson, the beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He was at the Viejas Center today, and he'll bring us up to date on all the things you wanted to know and maybe some of the things you didn't. So don't go away. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Text the show by sending ESPN to 69187 or give us a call at 364-1100. This is Rebel Extra.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, Brian Feldman, and producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado turning all the dials and taking your calls at 364-1100. Rebels fall today, 77-64 at San Diego State. At this time, we're joined by the gentleman, the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, that would be one Mr. Mark Anderson. Mark, before we get to the game itself, Jalen Poizer did not see the floor. We had a caller advise us that this was disciplinary. He broke some sort of team rule. Can you confirm that?
Yes, yes. Marvin Menzies said that in the postgame, that it was a violation of team rule. Looks like it's a one-game suspension. He said he needs to visit with Poizer before making a final determination, but it sounds like it's just today.
Well, it was sort of a tale of two halves, which sounds very cliche. And Brian pointed out the Rebels actually, if you're scoring at home, and hopefully you are, the Rebels won by 2 in the second half. But I felt the game was decided in the first half, and all the numbers were horrible. What's the body language of the team in person? There's always a different there's really a different perception when you see a game live versus on TV.
Well, you know, I wasn't sure what to make them when the game started, because it looked like in pregame they weren't all that energetic. But I, you know, looking back, I think they were just serious, because I actually liked the way they came out. and the way they were aggressive early, and I thought they played hard, and I thought they played hard throughout the game, and I that's why they kind of hung around, and Mitchum got it to within six at one point, because they really did have a lot of fight in them. So they were definitely disappointed. It's similar to how other losses have been during the stretch. We see them afterward. They're quiet. You know, there's not like they're a lot of yelling or anything, but you can tell that they're down, and they come out of the locker room just really quiet.
Mark, it's the 17th loss of the season for UNLV, and Steve Fisher could make a career out of playing UNLV. He's got more wins than any other coach in history against him, 27. I guess the closest guy to him is Steve Alford with 8. But you wrote a really nice article that I read this morning in the Review Journal, top of the sports page. Check it out if you haven't out there. It's Menzies has a flair for rebuilding, and you kind of make a little bit of a comparison of when he was the assistant coach, when he became the assistant at San Diego State back in 1999, how they didn't have a lot of talent. He went out, recruited 2-3 great players, and the program started turning it around. Is there any similarity to what we're going to see here at UNLV, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly similar situation. San Diego State was even worse that time than UNLV is now. They were just atrocious at that point. And so they needed – that's why he was out on the road constantly recruiting, because they needed – players badly. It really had nothing to do with that first season. It was about the future. And it's interesting because he is staying behind here. He's not traveling back with the team today. He's staying behind in Southern California to recruit. So it's kind of similar in that regard. I mean, it's not like he's going to abandon the team the rest of the season, but he's certainly made it a big focus to be down here and go get players. And I know one of his assistants, Eric Brown, was in L.A. on Friday, and so they're hitting it pretty hard right now.
They're looking at Brandon McCoy. I guess they saw Brandon McCoy.
Yeah, he was up in L.A. looking at someone else who they offered a scholarship to that night. And his name escapes me. I think he's in Pasadena, but yeah, Brandon McCoy. They're definitely in on him. They're one of five finalists for him.
Maybe they'll get another four-star recruit like Troy Baxter. What's the latest with him?
Well, Marvin said that he's got this foot injury that he's going to be out for an extended period of time, and he's thinking it might be a couple of weeks, but he wasn't sure. But he said it's the doctor held him out, and that it's something that's going to be take a while.
Mark, a cynical person might characterize this UNLV runner rebel team's offense is the one that really can only shoot threes. Other than that, they don't do anything. But I'm not a cynical person. So, having said that, when the Rebels hung in there in the first 14 minutes because they made some threes and climbed back into it in the second half because they made some threes, what are you seeing in terms of their complete lack of offensive cohesiveness, with the exception of an occasional possession here and there when their spacing is good? Because people keep asking, is it coaching or is it the players? And I've really sort of defended Marvin Menzies at this point. What's your opinion?
Well, he had a really good answer today when asked about making that run toward the end of the game, and he said it was Jovan Mooring. So it was basically the answer. It was Jovan Mooring that he took the team on his shoulders and did it. And I think that's the problem. And this started happening probably, I don't know, a month or so ago when it became clear that Mooring was the only guy they could rely on consistently. And he's inconsistent himself.
He had
2 points in the first half, right?
And 24 in the second half. 26 for the game. And yeah, he'll force that fall away three, and that'll hit with hands in his face, and it'll go in, and he'll throw in long bomb threes and play hero ball. But sometimes he'll be driving with three defenders, and Clyburn's wide open on the baseline, and he doesn't throw him the ball. So, Mooring will get you to where you can close it to win the 13-point loss. I'm tearing my hair out.
No, I agree. I agree with you, but he is the only one who is, Uche Efebu actually played well. They made all five of the shots, so those are the only two who really played well today. You mentioned Clyburn, and he was 2 of 10. He got back in the starting lineup today. I mean, his shot has just not been there. Tyrell Green, who's actually been playing really well lately, went 1 of 6 today. So you know, Fabio and Morgan were the only ones who shot anywhere decent. And UNLV actually shot 52.4% in the second half, but again, that's Morgan. It's not really UNLV, it's Morgan. So, and that's the problem. And you can't just, you know, even Michael Jordan needed players around him for he won titles. So, you know, you can't just be a one-man team.
Right. No question about it. And, you know, one positive is to see UNLV have success from the free throw line is kind of nice this year. I know it's something they focused on, and especially a guy like Dembele. When I look at the coaching of Marvin Menzies, the best I've seen so far is checking up Dembele, free throw line, his presence inside. But real quickly, Mark, you were talking about Clyburn and Dembele. Both of them at one point in the game went down with what looked like, from a spectator standpoint, what could be significant injuries. They both ended up being fine. Clyburn was writhing in pain, and then he came back in the game and made a great play at one point. Are they okay?
Yeah, they are. And Menzies said this about Clyburn in particular. He it was more of a scare than anything because, you know, he had the knee problem earlier in the season. He was afraid he'd messed up the knee again. But it was the knee itself was pretty much okay. My suspicion with Clyburn, though, is he hasn't really been 100%.
Right.
You know, I just haven't seen the explosiveness from him since real early in the season, and so the knee may be good enough to play, but I just don't think he's good enough for him to be who he was. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he had some. And I don't have any inside information. This is just my own speculation. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he had some work done in the offseason.
Sure, it looks just like he's got some of those ankle biting injuries that just kind of nag and they never quite go away because he had more explosion in November. But I do like him and I think he's got a future here.
I do too.
Let's look ahead to Air Force Wednesday. It's the game being billed as the fight for last place in the Mountain West Conference. Actually, it's not being billed by anybody. I just threw that out there. But the loser of that game will most likely have a solid foothold on 11th place in the Mountain West Conference. What's Coach Menzies' message to the team as they get on a plane, you know, short turnaround here Wednesday night at Air Force?
Well, I asked him about the standings, and he said he didn't really care about the standings. It didn't really matter to him if they were 9, 10, or 11 seed. They still got to go win 4 games in 4 days. And I think that's probably true. I think it probably, whether you're 9 or 9, 10, or 11, in the big picture, it probably doesn't really make that huge a difference. He did say, though, that they do need to win a game or two before the conference tournament because you don't want to go in the conference tournament with this massive losing streak, and then you have no confidence all of it. So if they can get a win or two, and they got a couple potential wins, I don't think they'll win at Air Force, but it wouldn't shock me if they did. I mean, that's a game they can win. And then Utah State is a game they probably won't be expected to win, but again, that's another game that they can win. So if they can win both those games, then maybe they can get a little bit of confidence going to the conference tournament. And you know, especially being at home, even as a lower seed, maybe they can get a win or two. So, obviously they're not going to make a run at tournament title, but you know, if they could at least finish the season with something positive, I think that'd be good for them to take into the offseason.
Hey, Mark, we have callers that actually are calling in, like wanting to make bets on players that won't stick around next year. Is there anybody that you're seeing is, you know, based on body language, someone you would just bet off, the, you know, isn't happy? And if you were to make a bet, say, that guy won't be here next year.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel overly comfortable just trying to speculate based on body language because you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, there could be someone who looks unhappy, but maybe there's something going on in his personal life, too, that no one's aware of except for the coaching staff. So, I do think that there will be changes. You know, they have one scholarship left to give. So, they want to give more than one scholarship. And so, then that's what you do. You have to have roster turnover. You have to recruit over guys you already have when you get the program where it is now. And so that will happen. That will happen. I think they'll probably have 3 or 4 guys that they'll, you know, either the players will leave on their own or their coaches will let them know that they're going to replace them. So I just, as far as getting specific and who, I just don't know that I, without any real reporting behind it to justify it, I don't know that I feel comfortable saying that.
Do you think Dwayne Morgan will be granted the redshirt season?
I do. I think that's why it took so long for them to finally come to that point where they shut him down for the season. is that they really did their homework to see that, to make sure they were doing all the right things to get them the extra season. I mean, you never know what the NCAA is going to do. They may find something that they're not 100% happy with and deny it. But I do like the chances for UNLV. And I've been asked about Tyrell Green, about why can he get the next year. And my understanding is that Tyrell Green continued to practice last season. And you can't do that. You have to. It's not enough that you can't play games. You can't practice anymore. Because, if, you know, the NCAA's reason would be, well, if you can practice, you can play. So so Morgan hasn't even been practicing. So I think they're in a really good spot to get that extra year.
Wrapping it up with Mark Anderson, beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Mark, final question for you. Speaking of practice, have you had a chance to see Jordan Johnson in a scrimmage? And for those who don't know, Jordan Johnson is the redshirt point guard, 5'9 point guard, who I think is projected to start next year. And I actually expect Joanne Mooring to come off the bench and back him up next year. I'm just talking out loud. But have you seen Jordan Johnson play?
Just limited. Like, you know, our access to practices has been really limited. I've seen maybe one scrimmage, part of one scrimmage the whole season.
You have any first impression or?
Nothing that really stands out, you know, what little I've seen in him and the little practice time I've seen is that, you know, he looks the part, you know. He looks like he's what you would expect out of a point guard. And he was, what, second or third in the nation assists a year ago in Milwaukee. So, you know, he's.
And he played for Rob Jeter. So obviously there's some familiarity there. So it's not, he's
right,
not really coming to
right.
court yet.
Yeah, no, I, you know, he's the best option they have for sure. And I think, you know, I guess it depends who else they recruit. I think Mooring will probably move over to the number two spot next season with Jordan Johnson as the starting point guard, and with Mooring backing him up at points to spell him from time to time. But because I think Mooring is a close enough player that I don't know that you want to put him on the bench necessarily.
But I don't know that you want to give him 37 minutes either. I think we'll save that thought for another day because we're up against it a bit. And I appreciate you joining us. I know you're under deadline, but definitely want to talk to you Wednesday after the Air Force game. Irrespective of where the seat is, the moniker of last place, anything surrounding with UNLV, can't sit well with people, regardless.
No, it certainly can't.
No. All right, Mark, as always, I appreciate your time a lot. Safe travels back. We'll talk to you Wednesday.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, it's Mark Anderson, beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We're going to take our final break of the evening. We'll come back, wrap it up, go over some numbers. Look ahead to Wednesday night versus Air Force and some final thoughts. Don't go away, folks. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Now, back to Rebel Extra on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Wrapping it up on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, Brian Feldman, and producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado turning all the dials. Rebels lose today at San Diego State, 77-64. They managed to shoot 42% from the field, 8 of 18 from three-point land, 60-19. Not bad, 84% from the charity stripe, 14 turnovers, 27 rebounds. Jovan Mooring leads the way, 26 points. Ochi Ofebu had 13. But San Diego State shoots 52%, 8 of 21 from three-point land behind the arc, and they out-rebound the Rebels 31-27. Brian, one of the things I want to revisit, you dropped a stat early in the show on Steve Fisher's record versus UNLV.
Yeah, 27 wins. Today was the 27th win. It is the most by any coach against UNLV. And as I said, the second closest to him is Steve Alford when he was at New Mexico. He won 8 games versus UNLV.
Steve Fisher has been at San Diego State, I believe, since 1997. Obviously, we both remember when he was at Michigan. We were both living in Michigan. I was at WTK in Ann Arbor on the radio back then when Fisher was unceremoniously removed. But 20 solid years at San Diego State, I believe he'll get Hall of Fame votes. He'll probably be in the Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame. The inverse proportion of that stat is he did it against 8 different coaches. So that means in the tenure, in the Steve Fisher tenure, UNLV has had 8 coaches. So this is my way of saying, let's pump the brakes. Let's not overreact. Let's give Coach Menzies a long time to ply his trade here. continuity, I think, is extremely important. People have asked me about the Menzies Hall pass, and I made the distinction two or three times. I did it with Mitch and Pritch last Tuesday. The bottom line is a Hall pass is doesn't mean he doesn't have cradle-to-grave security. It doesn't mean you can't scrutinize his style or comment on his results. But I'm simply not going to allow this season to define Coach Menzies as far as, one, was he the right hire? Two, was he capable of making UNLV relevant again? And three, will he ever have success in the Mountain West Conference, including getting the Rebels back to the postseason? I give Coach Menzies a hall pass based on the fact that this season will not define whether or not his future performance will provide those type of results that Rebel fans are pining for.
Bernie, I go back to the article today, as I mentioned, written by Mark Anderson in today's Review Journal, where he talks about, and the title of the article is Menzies Has Flair for Rebuilding. Again, he's trying to create a parallel to the beginning of Menzies' career as an assistant coach under Steve Fisher at San Diego State back in 1999, how Fisher said to Menzies when he came there, he said, I want you to do one thing. I want you to recruit. And he was able to do that, and San Diego State started a brand new culture. Marvin Menzies began that culture. And what I think what Mark Anderson is alluding to in today's article is saying he can do that here if he's given a chance. So, Bernie, I'm going to echo your sentiments exactly. I think having a coach, if you average that out, 20 coaches, 8 coaches in 20 years, that's a little better than 2 years
that doesn't
per coach.
That doesn't include Chris Beard. Remember the Chris Beard era?
Yeah, the Chris Beard era.
Well, and let's not bury the lead about Coach Menzies and his pedigree with legendary coaches. Lon Kruger speaks the world of Marvin Menzies, and that says a lot. Rick Pitino speaks the world of Marvin Menzies and says a lot. The team he left, New Mexico State, is having success. That's not a negative. That's a positive. It means he didn't,
Bernie,
leave, the,
you know what,
he didn't leave the cupboard bare.
Steve Fisher said, I think of him as a brother.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
high
how
praise
much
from a Hall of Fame coach. All right, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of Rebel Extra. On behalf of my broadcast team, Brian Feldman, producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado, I'm Bernie Fratto, bidding you good night. Next up for the Run of Rebels, Wednesday, 6 p.m. tip at Air Force. You want to be there for that one, and you want to be there for Rebel Extra. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, today's final score, San Diego State Aztecs, 77. UNLV Running Rebels, 64. Good night, folks. Enjoy your President's Day weekend. We appreciate you listening. Go Rebels.